Hello, everybody, and welcome to Uncork the Sun with the Vinstitute Wine School. I'm your host, Moss Shirkogel, and you're about to meet one of the first people in the Okanagan to say to me, that's not a real name. In today's interview, I'm going to introduce you to Justin Hall, one of the winemakers at Inkameep Cellars in Osoyoos. Now, it's possible that no introduction is necessary, since Justin easily does as many interviews and news pieces as any other winemaker in the Okanagan. You can read interviews with him in magazines, you can hear him speak on the radio, you can watch videos of him in the vineyard. If you want a really good double feature, just look on YouTube for Mercer Report Festival of the Grape. And in that video, you can first watch Justin talking to Rick Mercer all about winemaking, and then you can watch me talking to Rick Mercer about stepping on grapes. It's a great time. Now, one of the reasons that Justin makes the news with frequency is because, you know, he's a nice, likable guy, good at speaking, easy to listen to, which you will learn for yourself very shortly. But beyond that, he represents something a little bit special, being the first indigenous winemaker in North America. Probably. It's actually kind of hard to track that. But we're sure he's in the top three, at least. And he works at Inkameep. That's spelled N-K-apostrophe-M-I-P, which is in itself Canada's first Aboriginal-owned and operated winery, drawing all their fruit from the band's own land and vineyards that the band has been cultivating for decades. Every reporter loves an inspirational story, and the Osoyoos Indian Band is really genuinely inspiring. When I told the director of the Oliver Osoyoos Winery Association, Jennifer, that I was going to go and record a couple of interviews before I left the Okanagan, she immediately said, oh, go talk to Justin. And so I did. But I didn't go talk to him because he's an indigenous winemaker specifically, but instead because Inkameep is the first winery that I worked at when I moved to the Okanagan. And Justin was one of the first winemakers that I ever met, along with the rest of the Inkameep production team, Randy Picton and Aaron Cray. So this was really just me catching up with an old friend. We recorded this interview in June, sitting on the Inkameep Cellars patio in the fresh morning air, listening to air cannons fire off in the distance to scare away birds from the cherry trees. This means, of course, that you will also be listening to air cannons scare away birds from the cherry trees. And you'll also be listening to the clatter of Justin banging the table vehemently as he makes a point about life or something. So I apologize for the background noise. Without further preamble, please enjoy my interview with Justin Hall of Inkameep Cellars. Justin, please just state your full name and what your job is here.
My full name, Justin Drake Hall, a.k.a. winemaker.
Is that seriously your middle name?
Drake.
Middle name Drake?
Yeah.
That's a badass middle
famous
name.
Famous captain, and also a male dragon, and also a duck.
Which of those three things do you identify with?
Dragon for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just dragon, male dragon.
Yeah. Not too aggressive.
Oh, okay. You know,
soft colors, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
Shiny scales. Silver, that's what we'll do.
A beautiful silver drake.
Argentum.
That's how I'm always going to think of you from now on. Justin, you and I have known each other for a little while here. I guess probably about 10 years.
Getting close, I'm sure.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. You know, when I first met you, you were a little doughier.
It's all about the change. I think by the time I was in my lower 30s, I realized getting up there, I'm not in my 20s anymore, and mm-hmm. It's my last chance to get fit, so I started exercising. And
it worked.
Yeah.
You look fantastic. Yeah. Seems like you've really leaned into your role as winemaker, as sort of public figure winemaker.
I try.
Obviously, you are one of the winemakers at Inkameep Cellars.
Yep.
And how long have you been working here at Inkameep?
It's been almost 17 years now.
Holy
smokes. Seems weird. Like I'm 39 now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last few years, I've gotten more gray hair and times move on and people are like, how old were you when you started here? Thank God I have a few grays. I always picture a winemaker as being, I don't know, you know, most people, he's an older, I don't know, 50 or 5-year-old man or female.
Yeah.
Because you've got the experience, right? And you've worked in many different places and you've gotten the education throughout tasting with under many other winemakers and learning it. I guess I just worked hard and I don't know. The world's changing. Go to New Zealand. There's many winemakers on the age of 30. Many.
So do you think that you fit the persona of the winemaker that, that you typically expect?
For this winery, quite well. Yeah, media requests and constantly always something, right? Like I said earlier, you get fluent talking, you just get used to it. Mm-hmm. And I would say I know the wine industry fairly well. Mm-hmm. You never fully learn everything, and you're always, every year is different, and every winemaker's got a different perspective. So
yeah.
You know, ask lots of questions and just see what other people are doing out there and see how they're figuring out their problems. And it doesn't always work in your own winery either. You got to relate it to, you know, apples and oranges, not going to work here. Or, hey, I could steal some of that info and maybe just change it just a hair and make the wine from a 90-point wine to a 91.
Are you always kind of adapting in your practice here?
Almost every single day. Mm-hmm. Almost every day. Oh, let's go monthly.
let's give a little bit of lenience there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I just want to go back there because that was really interesting. How much of the job of being a winemaker, and not just you, but in general, how much of being a winemaker is being a bit of a public figure?
You know, working for Inkmeep, being the, you know, an Aboriginally owned, I call it Aboriginal to be politically correct, but native. I'm from the Osuyus Indian Band, so I'm an Indian. I truly am an Indian. That's what I am. For political correctness, we can continue on as, you know, a native winemaker.
Yep.
And being one of the first in North America, or the first, I'm not quite sure exactly.
I think, wasn't there a woman in Mexico who beat you to it? I remember that.
But is she,
hey, I don't,
is she native? I don't know.
I don't know. That's
yeah. I would say Canada then, at the very least.
Definitely Canada. You nailed Canada.
Yeah, I'm out there. I'm in the media all the time. Mm. Aboriginal Day is coming June 21st. Every single year they come to me, you know, for media requests, interviews, all through Edmonton, Alberta. Tell us about the winery, how you got in the industry. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I've grew up like most other native people. On our reserve was back in the 90s, our reserve was quite broke. We didn't have a lot of money. We had a grape industry, which sort of started helping us to thrive and to grow. And as the whole Okanagan grew and the wine industry really started to thrive through the later 90s, so did the Osuyus Indian Band, because then we started leasing some of our land for grapes to, at the time, was Constellation. We have roughly 1,300 acres of leased land, somewhere in the $1,200 per acre. Every single year, this is a constant income. And our chief calls it his, it's the tribe's rocking chair money. When something goes a little backwards, we've got something to fall back on, right? We've got many businesses and other things to relate to, but this is our money where we can go, okay, we had, you know, COVID-19 comes in and we have a little bit of a rough year in the wine industry throughout our stores. You know, certain businesses aren't doing very well. Well, we've got this money to back us up.
It's a good thing to have.
Yeah, we've got all different angles covered. So, yeah, they throw me out in the media often.
Do you think that if you were working at a winery that was not explicitly owned by the band, do you think that if you were somewhere a little more innocuous, that you'd be more of a private figure? Or do you think that's just kind of part of who you are?
I like working here. It's not that I wouldn't want to work somewhere else. It's just there's a real story behind this winery. And it's, of course, it's our own tribe's winery. So it makes it more passionate and more real to me, more, you know, at home.
There's an authenticity to it.
On this case, I'd hate to offend anybody out there, but the story behind this winery is it came from the 1968, where our people were leaving, you know, Canada to work into Washington, through BC into Washington. They were leaving their kids at home with grandparents, and there was nobody else to look after them. So when our tribe started this vineyard at the time, it was about keeping our own people here on our land instead of having to leave your kids. And that was the initial incentive to, let's build this grape industry. And I guess if I worked somewhere else, I wouldn't have that long backstory. It's not mine, per se. There are other wineries here who have long stories and history.
Every winery has a story, but yours, you know, yours spans half a century.
I think we just reached 50 years, 51 years now. And then Inkmeep Cellars comes in, you know, back in 2000, 2002. But without that original idea back in 1968,
this never would have happened.
I would never be here either. My son would I have, you know, the house I just bought, would my son have, you know, the clothing that I never had? All these things that I worked for, I strived to the company supported me and I supported them back. And I think we're like a symbiotic relationship. We work together, we feed off each other, and we really do well. But it's both our own thing, right? We didn't just, again, offend anybody, but come from, you know, a city. We have a bunch of money, and we started a winery because we love it. We're passionate. And that's a great story, too, but I just don't feel so much a part of it. Like, I don't feel like I'm a part of the land like I do on the Osuyu Siniban land where we get our grapes from.
Something pretty unique and pretty special, yeah. So I know that you've told this story in other interviews, but obviously there's going to be some crossover since you do so much of this, such a constant.
It's different. Every time is different, and that's the main thing.
But what I wanted to ask is, can you just tell us really briefly about how you got started at Inca Meat?
Broke father paying child support. That's the truth. You know, the whole Okanagan is based off of tourism, and it, depending on the industry, and there's many outdoor jobs through summer, so you have seasonal work here. That's just the way it is. And I worked in the golf industry. I had a son I had to support. His mother, we had broken up. So what do? It's find another job that'll support you through the winter as well. So I started bothering our winemaker here, Randy Picton, the head winemaker. I bugged him for about 3 months. I think it was, they were harvesting grapes. I was at a golf course nearby playing and kind of helping out with some of their work. And I noticed that the winery had some, you know, extra stuff here. So I went to the chief and I said, hey, I'm looking for a job. And he said, well, they're hiring down there. So I came to the winemaker and I started asking him, hey, I need a job. And I didn't get hired until January, but it wasn't like, oh, I need a job, you're hired, or sorry. I bugged him constantly.
You had to keep showing up.
Well, they said there was work, but he wasn't hiring. I'm like, what's going on here? Maybe he was looking for the perfect example, or, you know, somebody with a little more experience, because even our winemaker was young back then.
Yeah.
And having someone experienced would have really helped him out. But eventually he said, hey, I think it was January 24th, 2003, three or four. He says, come on in. We'll try you out. Whatever that means.
In the end, persistence won out over experience, eh?
Yeah. You can't just give up. But the weird thing was, so all this history coming together, and then 4 days later of me starting, I started at the Okanagan College in Penticton. I knew I wanted to be in the industry. 4 days. I never knew what I wanted to do. I never knew. So people, you know, I do these talks for teens and other things. They ask me all the time, we want to go do this. It's great. You go, great. Yeah, figure it out. As long as you're going to school. But many, many people, I was a mechanic before I started in the wine industry, which I took those, you know, skills over. I can fix a pump. I can fix, you know, small things in the winery.
Yeah.
But do something that's going to be able to help you just in case you want to change your field of interest a little.
What do you like to do? What's your favorite aspect of winemaking? What part of the year, what part of the whole system really kind of clicks for you? Where do you feel most at home in production?
I don't know. That's super difficult to answer. There's many spaces in...
Well, I like to ask challenging questions, Justin. I want to make you think.
I could talk all day if you like.
I know.
You're going to have to edit out hours of conversation. The beginning of the year is difficult, but it's the setup. Everything is about the setup and setting yourself up. It's about thinking and building this. I never considered myself an artist until about 5 years ago when I got my promotion to winemaker and I started really understanding it's the big picture. And I make a blend, Dreamcatcher, which you're familiar with. Seven or eight different tanks in there, mixes of Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Ehrenfelser. So a couple tanks of each, but the way that the end, you know, I can't just make every wine exactly the same. I'm trying to bring out certain aromatic precursors or certain mouthfeels out of each tank. But the end wine is going to be so different. So really using your knowledge and thinking about that artistic point of view, what is my end wine? I know this one's super acidic and that one's maybe a little sweet and maybe the other one's somewhere in the middle and you go, okay, this is the direction and you go, oh, you know, eventually fit it into one final wine. And now you have to do that every single year. And the challenges of each vintage and making a fairly consistent product is important to me. It doesn't have to be exact.
Yeah, you want continuity from year to year, right?
The worst thing is having somebody come in and go, oh, I loved your 15, I loved your 16.
Yeah.
17's terrible. What did I do wrong? You know, so it doesn't have to be Coca-Cola, but I want some consistency through the winery. I want to be able to stand behind the brand and say, we have a product, and I know next year I'm going to work just as hard, if not harder, to make that.
Is there any aspect of winemaking that you think the general public does not know enough about?
No, I think showing my passion, you know, really brings it to them. When people come through a tour through Inkimi, I give them my passion, and you know, I walk them through the steps. If they ask the questions, I'll break it down. Now, 99.5% of the people won't understand the chemistry or the science, so I tend to stay away from there, and I put it into layman's terms just to make it easier for the average human being. And they go, oh, I get it, right? You're talking about balance in wine, and a winemaker can go on for days about balance, the acidity, the mouthfeel, the creamy textures, you know, the sweetness. And a simple balance to, let's just say, the average Joe coming out of the street, say, I like it or I don't like it. Which wine will I like? And you say, I don't know. What? How do you like your lemonade? Sweeter in the middle? Do you like it lighter? Everybody likes, you know, iced tea. You can make thousands. I know it's iced tea, but imagine me talking about iced tea for half an hour about the balance of making the perfect cup of iced tea.
Yeah.
And make it refreshing. Everybody hates, or not everybody, but you taste someone else's iced tea. That's terrible. Now I've got to make wine for a wide array of people to taste good, right? So that final balance is about figuring out what people want. And you know, the newer generation, the millennials coming through, turning of age, what do they like to drink? What do winemakers like to drink? And fitting all those styles into one is very, very difficult and sometimes impossible. You just can't do it all.
No.
So you create two different styles is what you in the end.
So that's actually a perfect question for me to ask you. What do winemakers like to drink? What do you look for when you're tasting a wine? Let's say, for fairness sake, not Inkimi. If you're tasting a wine from some other winery.
Fairness. I have never.
What do you look for?
I have never given a review on Inkimi when I post stuff on media, unless you're coming specifically to Inkimi. I never push my own brand personally, because I feel it's cliche. Everybody thinks their winery is the best.
It's a little tacky. And you know, I mean, you hear about actors who never go to see their own movies and things like that. Like you're too close to it to really be able to give it an objective view. So
no, exactly.
So let's say you're going out, you're tasting something else from some other Oliver Assayas winery or whatnot.
That's all I taste. I don't even drink my own wines, because if you drink your own wine, we've all had that friend. We go to their house, I've got the best red wine you've ever had in your life. And they slam the table with their hand, and you taste it, and you're, did you ferment this in a boot? But they love it. If you drink your own wine all the time, you're going to love it eventually, even if, and you just won't realize it because you come accustomed. BC wines, you know, we end up, naturally, we get a little valley palate, and you got to be really careful of that as well. So I taste wines that are sometimes similar to ours, because I want to compare, but quite opposite. We don't do a Viognier here. We do a Pinot Blanc. It's nice and crisp. It's light. You can drink it like there's no tomorrow. 13% alcohol, so we're not pushing the alcohol envelope. Very, very good balance. You can slam it back. But when I drink wine, I want something that's just so different. I'll go out and I'll buy the biggest, richest, fattest Viognier I can find. And I enjoy every single second of it, because it's total opposite of our end of the spectrum here, right? Do I wish I made one? No, because then I wouldn't drink it either. You're ruining this for me.
You got to keep that separation between business and pleasure, right?
Drink stuff from other places.
Do you have any favorites? Do you have any other wineries that you really like what they're doing?
Mooncursor. Mooncursor's been doing some really good things out there. Road 13 had a Roussanne, I think it was the 2015 or 16, don't get me wrong on the vintage. Outstanding quality. It was big and rich, a little bit of sweetness, there was nice fatness. I think they got a platinum award for that one. Phantom Creek, I had a bottle of their Viognier the other day. Very, very rich and fat. Again, just different styles, right? They also have a Pinot Gris that they do in oak for a little while. I think long age oak, which was quite good.
All right. Justin, is there anything else you want to say before we sort of sign off here?
I'd like to thank, you know, a few important people in my life. This guy Moss, he comes around once in a while and, you know, makes life bearable again. Good conversations. And I appreciate the time, Moss, and I hope hope you do well.
Thanks so much, Justin.
Sad to hear you're leaving.
I'll pretend to shake your hand.
Thank you all for listening to Uncork the Sun today with me and with Justin, who is showing incredible fortitude in the face of COVID-19 and everything the pandemic has brought.
Give me a little fist pump.
Yeah, there you go.
We fist pumped.
And now we're sanitizing our hands right now.
Yes, sanitize. Yeah. Sanitize and wine all day.
You probably have such latent levels of sulfur and alcohol in your system that I'm sure no bacteria can survive.
It's not wine, it's whiskey. I'm about 40 proof at most given times. Cool, yeah, baby.
Back in those days, I was recording this from beautiful Oliver Soyuz wine country. To learn about Inkameep and all the other wineries in the area, your place to go is www.oliverasoyuz.com. Thank you to everybody who's been watching our live virtual Vinstitute broadcasts. Those are all available to view after the fact on the Oliver Soyuz Wine Country Facebook page and on their YouTube channel. We are taking a couple weeks off from the tastings for me to move into a new house, with the next session being held on Tuesday, September 8th at 7 o'clock p.m. live on Facebook, and the session after that is just 1 week later on September 15th. You want to know something? I did not have those dates written down, but I knew September 8th, and then I did the math right off the dome to know that 1 week later was September 15th. And you know how I did that? Because anybody who plays enough crib knows that 7 plus 8 equals 15, right? Right? Where are my crib players at? To post about this show or the live streams, please use the hashtag UncorkTheSun. This podcast is a collaboration between Oliver Soyuz Wine Country and the Vinstitute Wine School and is released on Friday of every second week. If you have any questions about wine or winemaking, please feel free to email me at moss@vinstitute.ca. The music for this episode was provided by Olav. To hear more of his work, visit olav.bandcamp.com. The host has been me, Moss Sherkogel. And don't worry about what Justin said, I love everybody's iced tea. Whether you are experiencing the beauty of Oliver Soyuz Wine Country from the comfort of your home, or whether you are planning to take a trip there in the future, we cannot wait to raise a glass with you and uncork the sun together.